The information included in this podcast is for informational purposes only. Nothing discussed here is intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, and never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you heard on this podcast.
Everyone, this is Victoria Porter. I'm a licensed clinical social worker. You're listening to the Healthy Hot Springs podcast from the Razorback Campercell Studios. Health is our most important asset, and on this show, I sit down with local health professionals to discuss opportunities and strategies for you to get healthy hot springs. Okay, I'm in the podcast studio today. Christian Long is back. Thank you for coming back to talk about EMDR therapy. I know in part one, we really kind of started the general information. Mm-hmm. What is EMDR therapy? We'd gotten through a few steps. Mm-hmm. So let's pick up kind of where, first let's, in case someone has not listened to the first one, you should listen to the first one first. Mm-hmm. But give just a little bit of information about what is EMDR, you're in private practice here in mm-hmm. Hot Springs. I know we talked about you're incredibly busy right now finishing your PhD. Tell our listeners a little bit about what you're doing with EMDR, and mm-hmm. and we will just kind of dive in where we left off.
All right. Yeah, I'm Christian Long. I'm a private practitioner here in Hot Springs, but I do teletherapy in the state of Arkansas. So some of my clients, that's another neat thing about EMDR, is you can do it on teletherapy and in person. So, awesome. Yeah. And if you didn't listen last time, it was a lot of information. I think to understand why it works, it's complex. There's a lot of systems and theories in place. But I really want to go back to, like, there's 8 phases in EMDR, and there's a lot of heavy lifting up front.
You know? And EMDR is what?
Eye movement desensitization and okay. reprocessing.
Okay. All right, so briefly go over those. I think we made it through the top 4,
yeah.
right? Okay, so mm-hmm. name those again, and then we'll dive into where we started.
All right, phase 1, history taking. That's me. And that's going to be like any other therapy session, too, is, you know, hey, why are you coming in? What are your strengths? What is that, you know, trauma or thing look like? What does it feel like? How is it impacting you? What's your support system? There's a lot of wrapped up and involved in history taking, because I'm also looking at how are they going to take care of themselves. And I said this last time, sometimes bringing this trauma back up is re-traumatizing. I need to make sure this person's going to be okay mm-hmm. you know, when they leave my office. So a lot of heavy lifting up front, you know, history taking. Phase 2 is preparing the client. You know, I probably give them too much information, you know, better to have it and not need it. But here's what it looks like. Here's what you may feel like after. That's an important thing to talk about. After you reprocess a memory, if you want to look back up and look at it, we just activated your nervous system really intensely for an hour. You know, it's actually recommended to process over an hour for EMDR sessions. But really activated for over an hour. So how do you think you're going to feel as soon as when you go home for
like
that day?
Like you've been hit by a truck.
Yes. you know, in the therapy world, we call it dissociation. Mm-hmm. I call it being frizzed out mm-hmm. or, you know, tapped out or kind of blank. A lot of the times that's really normal. Mm-hmm. You're going to go home and be done. So I tell people, look, don't think you're going to do anything mm-hmm. when you leave here. And that's why there's planning in EMDR sessions, too. I'll check in with people. Hey, is this a processing day? If we process, is it going to negatively impact what you need to do today or tomorrow? So being aware.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is intense work, very emotional work. And so then we're going to assess that target memory. So that's phase 3. What does that trauma look like? And again, the other part, we talked about that. It could be anything. It could be big, those catastrophic traumas. It could be racism. I mean, I think that's important, too. It could be something with your gender that you've struggled with. Mm-hmm. It could be divorce that you just went through. You name it. Your trauma is yours. And I think we talked about the definition. is it negatively impacting you? Are you having symptoms related to your difficulty incorporating this memory? You know, that makes it appropriate.
Right. How does it impact your day?
Yeah. You know, and is it impacting your relationships with people? Because you had an abusive relationship. So now you're going into it thinking this person's going to hurt you.
Pretty much all trauma is impacting your relationships.
Right. I mean, you're not wrong. So now we get into the fun part. So phase 1 through 3, heavy lifting. Let's really map everything out. And I'm a type A person. We're going to map it till I've uncovered the dust in every corner if I can help it. Sometimes I don't, but I'm going to try. Mm-hmm. But then we're going to reprocess the memory. So you come into my office.
And so this, I think this is really important because a lot of people will have some anxiety related to, like, what is this process like? And so you're just kind of going to kind of walk us through what it would be like to actually come in and do this, okay?
Mm-hmm. So comfort's number one. I am a safe, comfortable space. If I am not that, I am not doing it right. So I want to come in, I call it like therapy dread. That people get like, oh, God, I got to go talk to my therapist. And it's like, I know I'm going to feel some things I don't want to feel. I have people not show up.
Yeah.
You know, I've had people tell, like, a lot of my clients that know me, that's going to be the first thing out of their mouth is, I did not want to come see you.
Because it's hard.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah. That's fine. Well, you're doing hard stuff when you're going to therapy.
Yeah.
You know, good stuff, but hard stuff.
And so, worth it.
I think so. Can effectively live better and be yourself and settle into who that is. So one, I'm going to assess comfort. You know, is that physical comfort? Which chair do they want to sit in my office? Do they need a blanket? Do they need texture? You know, people with autistic people, I'm going to do a little bit different. I'm going to definitely focus on sensory stuff. Do I need to turn my lights down? You know, I don't want to activate the nervous system outside of the trauma memory. I have stress balls in my office. I have essential oils if they need a calming smell. I mean, I'm really going to tap in and make sure they're comfortable because this is an uncomfortable process. Whatever I can do. So we're getting ready to reprocess. And this is a big term for EMDR. It's in the name. It's a bilateral stimulation. So there's eye movement. What is that? What does it look like?
Okay.
So think back and forth. Bilateral stimulation, so you have two sides of your body. This can be done a bunch of different ways. The most talked about way is your eyes. So imagine if you're looking at a wall, you're going to go back on one point and look complete opposite way with your eyes on the other point. Don't move your body, so your eyes are going back, forth. Think of like hypnotists, right? So that's bilateral stimulation. You're engaging both sides of your body. You can use tapping. So I have tappers, wireless ones that vibrate, and I'll have them either stick them under their legs on each side or hold them. You can do a light bar where it's literally a thin bar with a light that bounces like Pong back and forth on it that they follow. So a bunch of different ways.
So that creates the movement. Okay.
We're just stimulating both sides of the body. We're activating alternative sides, so it's allowing the brain to access its full self.
Okay.
We're engaging everything. So we can't really effectively process memories without that part of EMDR. You know, and I'm, as a practitioner, I'm looking for what happens because sometimes I'm doing eye movement with you and it's not working. You're overthinking it. You're like, I can see a hesitation in your eyes as I move my hand back and forth or as you look at the light bar. So I'm going to go, okay, hey, let's get into your body. Put your hands on your lap, one on each leg, tap back and forth. And I'm going to get loud for a minute, but sometimes it's really fast. When we're reprocessing, it's going to be, I mean, you're going really fast back and forth. Okay. Maybe not that much, but it depends on the person. When we're installing, I think this is important too, we install positive feelings and things. Sounds like a computer. But we go slower. So your tapping is going to be a little bit slower. But when we're reprocessing, we want it to get out. So whether you're looking and you're feeling, whatever method you use, I find I'm just going to assess that and suggest it. And we're going to try different things until it works.
And the importance of activating your entire body is?
It's going to engage you. So our brain has different hemispheres, right? Different areas. We're actually, okay, you're using different systems, even looking certain ways or moving parts of your body certain ways or thinking about certain things. I mean, we want to engage all of it. And so it's actually kind of a regulatory thing too. So you're getting your bilateral stimulation, like you're kind of adapting to your body's response when you bring that trauma up.
Okay. And so while you're, I'm sure you're probably fixing to say this. So while these things, you're doing these physical actions, you as the therapist is going to be?
I'm more of a director.
Okay.
So I'm going to have, if you're my client, all right, get your trauma in your mind. Engage in all senses. What does it look like? What does it smell like? What does it feel like? Put yourself there. It's kind of a visualization, like a guided imagery thing.
Okay.
All right, once you get that in mind, and ideally, if you're using like a vibrating tappers and it's more hands, I'm going to have them close their eyes. If you're using eye movement, it's going to be hard to follow and close your eyes, but get that memory in your mind. All right. Then we're going to go through sets. So, again, I'm going to use my judgment to see what their window of tolerance is as far as what they're bringing up. And then I'm going to tell them, hey, if this gets too much, we can stop. Let me know. I'm here, you know, let me know if you're uncomfortable, if you need to sit with a feeling for a minute, we can stop the process. But sometimes discomfort is a sign of growth.
Right.
So it's like we need to push ourselves a little bit, but if it gets a little much, let's push pause. So I'm going to ask them, get the trauma memory in your head. I'm going to start the movements, whether it's following my fingers back and forth. I'm sitting kind of across from them. Or I love using my tappers because it takes all the thought. It's just vibrating back and forth in each in your hand. All right, get your trauma memory. You're on a train. You're just watching. You're just observing. Don't judge it. And it reminds me of yoga and meditation. Like, stop judging your thought. Just let it flow in.
Mm-hmm.
You're just observing it. That's your whole job here. Observe your emotions that come up. Observe your body sensations that come up. Observe your memories or your thoughts that come up. And just follow.
And there's nothing that's good or bad.
No.
Or, right. It just is.
Yeah. And so sometimes what that looks like, and it can take so many different forms. So you're engaging your whole self using that, and you have this trauma and what we call the working memory. It's kind of like right in front of your face. Here's this working memory that we access every day, but here's this trauma that you squish down. Okay, what thoughts, you know, I'm not safe. Well, here's why I'm not safe. Maybe your brain does that. Here's all the things that happened.
Mm-hmm.
I've had people have somatic body reactions like, oh, when I thought of that, my whole self felt tense and on fire, felt warm. I felt a ball of stone in my gut. Okay, go with that. We're not going to overthink it. We're just going to bring it out. You know, you hear go with that a lot, and then we'll go right back into another set. Lately, I've been using, you know, 30-second sets with people, 45, kind of seeing where it is. But it depends on the person. I'm going to alter the speed and, you know, how long we do it. The longer, the better. We want to give ourselves, and that's another factor that we have to think about, is trust whatever comes up. Don't judge it. And you just said that, but, like, trust yourself enough that whatever comes up is relevant.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you're an observer. So if you're in a car wreck and your negative belief is, I'm not safe, maybe you have that body reaction. And I've had people physically, okay, I can feel where the seatbelt was.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh, my body hurts.
Tense up.
Yeah. They start having these reactions, or maybe they have this thought of, it was my fault. There's that blame. And so it's really important that whatever comes up when we're reprocessing, we just let it, you know, and really hash that out. Sometimes I use a lot of cognitive behavioral. We call it a different word in EMDR, but I swear I pull from all the different modalities that I've learned. But all right, let's sit with that phrase you just said. Let's hash that out. Like, where did that come from? What message, have you heard that before? You know, anytime, that's another rule for myself and other people too that I think is helpful, is like, if you have a strong emotional reaction to something, what does it remind you of?
Right.
You'll probably think of something else.
Mm-hmm.
But we're bringing that memory to the forefront, right in front of your face. we're engaging the whole body with that bilateral stimulation, tap back and forth, or eye movement back and forth. We're using our whole selves for a minute and actually being in it instead of avoiding it and allowing whatever to happen, happen.
And this resolves the trauma how?
So it's you're adapting it. You're not making it, you know, minimizing it or anything. You're looking at what's your response to it. What's that cognition? That's a response. That belief is still a response to whatever happened to you. So maybe it's calming down the physical symptoms. So I'll spend a long time of maybe this person has body responses like their stomach's tight or their chest is tight. Okay, let's go with that. I want you to focus on that chest tightness. And then we go back into another set.
So I'm putting myself in the shoes of our listeners, and I'm thinking, but what does the eye movement have to do with that process?
It's really about engaging, and so it's putting ourselves, you know, actively involved in the moment, which is the opposite of avoidance, right?
Okay, I think that that ding ding ding, right? right, because. This is kind of forcing you to have these body reactions, right? And here, instead of avoiding all of the feelings, you're what am I trying to say here?
You're fully experiencing them, and sometimes re-experiencing.
Trauma, yeah. Right. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And instead, because typically we consider that to be like, you know, I hear it all the time in grief work where it's like, oh, I've had a really bad day, you know, and I'm like, let's take the bad out of that and just, this is a normal grief reaction to a horrible experience that I've been through, right? And I feel like that's kind of what this work is, that we're going to lean into, you know, to still an often used phrase, we're going to lean into these, you know, feelings in our body instead of avoiding them.
Well, and, you know, bringing that memory, don't forget, it brings that nervous system response.
Yes, right.
And so we're actually activating the nervous system. The back and forth movements are stimulating both sides of our brain. We're engaging our brain.
Right.
There's a lot of brain work and nervous system work in this, but like we're fully bringing ourself online with this memory in our mind, and we're experiencing maybe for the first time the true emotions attached to it, the true body sensations attached to it, and we're lessening them.
And how does it lessen them?
One, we're experiencing it, especially for people that have been avoidant or squishing. Some people, we're processing a memory that they forgot.
Unlocking that box.
Yeah. Yes. And that's why it brings up other forgotten stuff or pushed back stuff, you know, and we do that to survive, but it also hurts us on a level sometimes we're not even aware of, you know, because we haven't experienced that. So EMDR is, let's experience this memory again. You know, in that way, it's kind of similar to exposure therapy. Let's expose you to the traumatic event. But let's do it while we're regulating our nervous system. We do, every time we do a set, I'll bring this up. So you have the trauma in your mind. We do 30 seconds of back and forth, back and forth. And you're just observing what's happening in your body, emotions. You may have thoughts. Before you even open your mouth, I'm going to say, all right, deep breath. Like deep breaths, so regulate and then express what you just experienced, what changed. I'm always assessing for what changed. Did you have a new thought? Did you have a new feeling? Did it stay the same? Did it go away a little bit? We're going to stay there. So the person is staying in the discomfort, whatever, emotional or physical or intellectual, depends on the memory. Stay in that. And let's keep focusing on the reactions. Let's keep looking at them as we do this. And they get less. Every time we look at them, every time we feel them, every time we give them space.
How many steps do you take if you have a rock in your shoe? Not many. Well, if you have to walk on a prosthetic leg that does not fit, it is like walking with a rock in your shoe. Although there are many innovations when it comes to prosthetic feet and knees, the comfort of a prosthesis begins with the fit of the socket. Michael Kenny is a certified prosthetist who has been walking on a prosthetic leg since he was 16 years old, after losing his leg to a motorcycle accident. He is committed to fitting prosthetic legs so they are comfortable, intimate, and optimize ease of walking. Motility Prosthetics has been in Hot Springs since 2015, but Michael Kenny has been building legs for over 25 years. All fabrication is done on site. There are no delays from having to ship to a fabrication house. Adjustments can easily be made on the spot. Motility means the spontaneous ability to move. At Motility Prosthetics, we want you to be able to walk on your prosthetic leg with a sense of spontaneity. Call for a free consultation, 501-620-4800.
And so over time, you're going to have a physiological reaction is going to decrease.
Yes.
As you think about these traumatic events. And so let's go back to the car accident. What's that like? Are you going to start getting in your car and you no longer have this, you know, this negative thought of driving is unsafe and tensing your body and, you know, having your heartbeat increase? Is that what happens?
Amazingly, a lot of the time, yes. That's exactly what happens. Is you know, we've activated our whole body, our brain, our nervous system, everything during this process, and we've been in those reactions together, you know, and we're kind of increasing our tolerance to them as we experience them, as we process them. But a lot of the time, sometimes it's existential, right? Where I'm not safe. Oh, wow, I've always felt like that. Oh, wow, it's because of this time when I was five, not just the car accident. And so I think you have to throw that in there, too. Of sometimes we have these profound realizations of how we're looking at ourselves. Because in reality, how we see the world is how we see ourselves. If we see the world as an unsafe place, well, then we're unsafe all the time. You know, and so we're going to behave accordingly. So through reprocessing, through engaging in this process, we're acclimating ourselves to that response and really looking at it. And the more we look at it and feel it and experience it and talk about it, I mean, there's a big talk, you know, processing part of this with me. It doesn't hold you like it used to. It gets less and less. And it reminds me of like conditioning, right? You ring, like, for those of you that are aware of, you know, psychology nerds, but ring the bell, the dog salivates because he knows it's dinner time. That's a reaction.
if there's, right, so originally there's food and the bell at the same time.
Yeah.
Right? So, and eventually you can take that food away
and ring the bell,
and the dog reacts just like if it were food.
Yep.
And there's no food there.
It's Thank you, Pavlov,
bell.
For that.
Yes.
You know, theory.
Yes, we all learned that one many, many times over. But it's this. But that's the root of our physical reactions to these types of experiences.
Yeah, and I think, you know, this is a complex topic. Trauma is, period. We could talk about trauma way beyond what we are today, but I think, you know, you're looking at these reactions that you're having, you're lessening them. And so I'd like to think you're taking more control of yourself back, because think about that original definition of trauma that I gave on the first part of this. It's, you know, situations where your control, even if it's perceived control, has been taken away and you're having a hard time taking this memory and relating it back to yourself and the world. Yeah. And so through EMDR, you're taking control back of your body reactions. I'd like to think you have better coping skills when you're done with all this, because we've talked about deep breathing and all the other things that we've done. And so you're getting these skills and these tools to take control back from a situation that you had none in.
Yeah. And I still think this goes back to this idea of so much of this work happens outside of the therapy office, right?
Yeah.
And you don't want to have to be in therapy forever. So I think sometimes people think there's this like big aha moment where it's like, oh, I get it. Right?
My magic wand, the therapist waves. I have it in my desk.
I need it. right? But what the reality of therapy is that you use these techniques and over time you're like, oh my gosh.
Wait, I'm doing it.
I actually do feel better.
Yeah.
This, you know, 6 months from now, you're like, wow, I feel better, but you have to do the work.
Yeah. See, and I, you know, there's a lot of parts of EMDR that I, you know, we're not talking about.
Yes.
And I will, and we'll get into that later, but like, this is 40 hours of training for me that I've had, but the, here's the big part. Here's phase eight, the last phase, evaluating the results. We call it integration.
Okay.
So let's say we went through and processed that car wreck and your distress went down. Remember I love my scales because it helps me and you see how much progress we made. So mm-hmm. when we first started and I had you picture the car wreck, it was a 9. I mean, your whole body tensed up when you just thought about it. You wanted to throw up. All right. Maybe we reprocess it maybe sometimes more than one session. It depends on the memory. I find that a lot of childhood stuff, this is going to take a while. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to see you every week. Sometimes I'll see two people twice a week mm-hmm. to really get the work done. Mm-hmm. But we're going to, when that car wreck, when you bring it up in your mind and you're like, oh, well, it's a 6 now. That's still progress. Just want to point that out. You know, it lessened. Well, eventually we want it to get to a 0. I have to, and you'll relate to this too. Some traumas are never going to be mm-hmm. a 0. If you lost a child, I'm never going to think that you're going to be a 0 mm-hmm. when you think about that. You may be a 2, and that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. I think that's, you know, that's a whole nother podcast.
Yeah.
You know, the grief is a lifetime. Mm-hmm. And trauma is too, right?
Yeah, it is. It changes your nervous system. Yeah. You know, that's the other part we talked about. Like, I think that's a big part to look at. This changed your brain.
Yeah.
This changed your nervous system and how your body responds to stress. This is your yardstick for how to move around in the world. And so we're kind of rewiring that in what we're doing. And it's really neat, but it's hard. And so maybe we get it down to a 6. All right, we call it integration. How are you going to integrate the thoughts that came up? The regulation that we used, how are you going to take that into your life? And I'm going to assess that next time they come see me. All right, what came up this week? Mm-hmm. I encourage journaling. I'm an art person. So mm-hmm. you wanted to paint something, paint it. You wrote a song or a poem, share it with me. Mm-hmm. You know, this is the scary part of trauma reprocessing sometimes or uncomfortable. Sometimes another memory will come up in between sessions. Sometimes you'll have a dream. Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? Now we have a new target memory. You know, this came up for a reason. Let's trace it back. It's like strands of string, mm-hmm. you know. Processing is important in between sessions. Write about it, sing about it, talk to your, you know, support system, mm-hmm. whatever that looks like. But don't stop the process. You're kind of clearing the closet out in your brain. You have to keep cleaning it out.
And the process will go on, mm-hmm. forever?
I mean, if you're working your way up to self-actualization, then yeah. But, I mean, it depends. That's really, I'm meeting the person where they're at. You know, sometimes we need to focus on one, get through that, take a break. Let's just worry about life stress for a couple mm-hmm. of sessions, and then let's revisit that hard stuff.
Okay.
You know, but I'm going to follow whatever they need. But I really want to know, how are you integrating that? That is phase 8 of EMDR. And again, I'm leaving a lot out. There's body scans we do.
Yes.
There's a whole lot. And I really encourage anybody to look into it. It's an interesting process. You know, I think Prince Harry was interviewed uh-huh,
yes,
because he
used yes.
doing EMDR. I mean, it's yeah. kind of out there right now. It's a highly complicated, interesting process, but it's effective. I mean, the evidence shows it's so effective.
So mm-hmm. tell me
how I got here.
Yes. How do you, because mm-hmm. it's important that you go to someone who knows what they're doing.
Oh, please do not do EMDR processing with somebody that's not a licensed professional, with someone who doesn't have a certificate hanging in their office. I like, please don't do it. And mm-hmm. I hate that I even have to say that. Mm-hmm. But Grapevine, there's life coaches, there's, I've heard of a yoga teacher, mm-hmm. I've heard of other people getting into these trainings and then being practitioners. You have to go to a licensed professional. Mm-hmm. I'm talking LPC, licensed professional counselor, LCSW, psychologist. You know, I would assume maybe some psychiatrists have this training, but you need to go to a licensed professional that has multiple skills in their toolbox before you open this Pandora's box for yourself.
And what does that entail? A person, for you, you said you had, what, 40 hours of...
Oh, yeah. Well, I lost my mind, and I did this while I was pregnant. Mm-hmm. so I squished my training into probably not enough months, but it's when I did mine, it was broken up into 2 weekends of 20-something hours each. I think it was 20 hours, actually. Yeah. So weekend one, you're going to learn the basics. You're going to learn, and it's a lot, you know, if you're a therapist, a lot of our learning is interactive. They actually want to see you use it. So for those of you interested in getting EMDR certified, you have to come to the training with a trauma that you're working on. Like, you're going to have to do the work in front of other licensed professionals with your colleagues. You're going to have to do it on your colleagues. And so it's 3 days of, all right, here's the foundation. Here's what it looks like. And you have focus groups as you're doing it. All right, take what we learned today. Here's these scenarios. Act them out. Point out what you think the negative cognition would be. Point out what you think the positive cognition would be. And so you're actually doing it as you're learning it.
And so apart from those, that initial training, there's more.
Well, there's more.
Yes.
Oh, wait, there's more. So you go to weekend one, and here's the crazy thing. They go, all right, go forth and use the skills. And then you have to go to 5 hours of consulting. And I could be wrong, but it's 5 hours of consulting before you can do weekend two. So you have to actually use the skills. Talk with EMDR consultant. They've had additional training. This is a big certification that they've done. So you're contracting with them. You're going and talking with them an hour minimum for 5 hours. And so you're using the skills in practice after that first weekend. Then you go to weekend two, and now we're talking advanced techniques. More theoretical base, you know, more information of how to effectively do this with people. A lot of the focus, too, is put on blocks. We call them blocks. So you get stuck in a memory. What can you do to get somebody unstuck? What can you do if your client is dissociating, so blanking out, detaching from their reality? What can you do if you have a client that has an alcohol use problem? Mm-hmm. You know, I think there's even focus on kids. Can you do this with kids? The answer is yes. Measuredly, carefully. But yes, you can. But here's these red flags to look out for. Here's where you need to push pause. Here, you know, how do you effectively use this? How do you know it's appropriate for someone? So a lot more emphasis on that second weekend of what are going to be your hang-ups? What are going to be the hard parts of this?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think as a therapist, knowing when to push pause.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Pay attention to the person in front of you, you know. Yeah. Turn that empathy up. Watch their body language, watch their facial expression, watch how they're carrying this weight. If you see you need to stop and talk about it, do it. You know, if they're having an alcohol use problem, you can do it. Be aware of that. If they're dissociating and you know what that looks like, stop. You know, when you go through EMDR training, they really highlight if you don't have expertise in dissociative identity disorder or somebody who dissociates, don't practice EMDR. You have to have that extra training. Mm-hmm. That's a whole nother beast that you have to do. There's scales or assessments that you can give somebody before they walk in to see if they dissociate. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really important to know warning signs because you can make a problem worse. Mm-hmm. I think as a therapist, we always have to have that in our mind. We can make a problem worse. We can re-traumatize someone and bring out more pain than they're ready to handle.
Which is what's so important to have someone properly certified and licensed. And well, Christian, I feel like we could talk about this forever. We've covered so much. Is there anything major we have left out?
I think if I want to leave anything with someone, because there's other modalities, there's other ways to address trauma. There's somatic experiencing, and I'm going to leave off a lunch. But, like, whatever way you want to look at it. You know, you probably find one that fits for you, but don't hold on to it alone anymore.
Right, and I think that is the most important part about therapy is there is a right one out there for you.
Yeah.
Right, and we as therapists are so, like, you know, your focus is on things so different than what I'm focused on, right? Mm-hmm. And that is true for, I feel like we all have our things that we're passionate about.
Yeah.
And there will be the right therapist for you.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you know, there's so much crossover, too.
Yeah. And if EMDR is not right for you, mm-hmm. then there is something that is.
Absolutely. And I joke with anybody that comes in my office, you know, humor is a big part of my personality, but finding a good therapist is like dating. Yeah. You may have to break up with a couple people before you find somebody that you jive with, before somebody that makes you put your guard down.
Yes.
You know, pay attention to that.
And we therapists do not take it personally.
No,
we
I will help you find someone else. But, like, find somebody that makes you feel yourself.
Yes.
You know.
So important.
Oh, yeah. I think we all need one, but I'm biased.
Okay. Wonderful, Christian. Thank you so much for coming in to talk about EMDR. I just love that there are so many things out there to help people through anything, really. Christian Long, LCSW, give us your contact information.
All right, my name's a little tricky, so I'm going to spell it. So my email is the best way to get a hold of me with all my balls I'm juggling right now. But it's christianlonglcsw@gmail.com. So christianelonglcsw@gmail.com.
And the important part of that is don't forget the E after the N.
Yes, yes. Thank you. It's silent.
Okay. Thanks so much for coming.
Oh, such you're an important welcome. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to Healthy Hot Springs from the Razorback Camper Sales Studios. Join us every Wednesday as we discuss a different topic related to keeping hot springs healthy.